Hi, and welcome back to Undisclosed. Rabia here. I'm here, as always, with my colleague, Colin Miller. Hey, Colin, how you doing?
I'm doing well. How about yourself?
I'm well. I am excited about today. We have a special guest on who's going to tell us about one particular case that she's done a lot of work on. And joining us today is independent investigative journalist and editor-in-chief of The Current Report, CeCe Woods. Welcome to the show, CeCe.
Thank you for having me.
I'm going to allow my colleague Colin to introduce you a little bit.
Yeah. And so CeCe Woods is the editor-in-chief at The Current Report, which focuses on public corruption, institutional accountability, and high-profile criminal and civil cases. She has also contributed reporting and commentary to The Epoch Times, covering public safety, law enforcement, and governmental oversight.
CeCe, you've covered a lot of really important stories over the years as an investigative journalist, but today we wanted to have you on to talk about a case that you've done a lot of independent investigating and reporting on all over your website. And it is a very different story than we have heard from the mainstream media about this particular case. And so just to set it up for folks, we're going to be talking today about the Rebecca Grossman case. And if you know anything about true crime, you have heard about this case. It is a tragic case involving the deaths of two young brothers by a vehicular accident.
And so, CeCe, let me go ahead and let you set the scene. This is Tuesday, September 29th, 2020. It's in Westlake Village, wealthy area outside Los Angeles. It's 7:10 p.m. So what happened in Westlake Village back in 2020?
Well, that night, Rebecca Grossman, who is a philanthropist, she's not a socialite like it was reported all over the news. She is a philanthropist. And her husband is Peter Grossman of the Grossman Burn Foundation. They do amazing work. Mm. And they were separated at the time. And she was out with her then boyfriend, former pitcher, Scott Erickson. He was on the Dodgers. And they went out to a Mexican restaurant and she had one margarita. And so did a mutual friend of theirs who was their former Major League Baseball player, Royce Clayton. He also had one margarita. Scott had one large margarita. And Scott had been drinking earlier in that day with Royce at a local restaurant called the Stone House. So they left the Mexican restaurant and Rebecca was following Scott behind his car back to her house. They were going to watch the presidential debate. Royce was going to go to the grocery store, get some provisions because I believe he's like vegetarian or something like that. So he wanted to go get his own stuff and then meet them back at the house. On the way to the house, a tragic accident happened that killed two young boys, Mark and Jacob Iskander. And I believe they were 8 and 11.
Brothers, right?
Yeah, brothers. And at the time, what they were doing was traveling on their skates and skateboard, and they were behind their family, okay, in the crosswalk. And so I guess the mom heard and the dad heard cars coming, looked, dove out of the way, and the two kids were killed.
Oh, God. Okay?
And we say cars, these are two SUVs, right?
And not just two. I believe there were a total of 8 cars that were traveling at a high speed. And the speed that has been reported is all over the place.
Right.
Like the black box says one thing, people say another thing. You know what I mean?
And there's no speed cameras there?
No. So there should be, because that part of the canyon, I've lived in that area for over 20 years. I just recently moved to the South Bay because the fires are too much for me. Mm. And I'm telling you, that area, any of those canyons, it's a total speedway. Mm. Okay. And lots of car clubs like to race up and down PCH and through the canyons. So they all do it. They all do it. Mm. And that is not a residential area either. Like people want to say that road is open. It's not like.
Oh, so this is not in a neighborhood. I thought this was, I imagined it was like,
no,
you
it's
know.
A canyon road. Triumphal Canyon is a canyon road. You know what I mean? So that's why cars race through there so fast, because they treat it like a highway. Not that they should, but they treat it like a highway. Anyway, okay, so imagine Scott Erickson is right in front of Rebecca's car by 3 seconds. When they travel through the crosswalk, he is the first one through. There is no mathematical way he missed those kids. Mm. None whatsoever. Okay.
Right. Because what would have had to happen is the kids cross after him, right? Like that couldn't have worked.
Or even so, some one of the complete ignorant theories out there. Oh, he like changed lanes and got back. How do you change lanes and get back in the same exact lane and you're crossing the crosswalk 3 seconds later right in front of Rebecca's car?
Yeah.
So, granted, Rebecca was driving too fast and she was following too close to Scott. So there's no debate about that at all. Okay. So there is video that shows a black SUV.
Right. Which is what he was driving.
Okay. So the video shows the cars going through the crosswalk it's on my website.
Do they show the children being hit?
No. Okay. No.
Right.
No, thank God. Don't think I could handle that. Mm. So, I mean, look, if I have to for a story that I have to report on, I will, right? But not that I want to. But anyway, this is private security camera that shows the cars going through the crosswalk. They also show the cars in the other lane that are going around the kids. Okay. You can't really see the kids, but you could see them going around trying to miss whatever, you know, is in the roadway. So Scott continues to Rebecca's house, which is about 2 blocks down. Then he comes back on foot and just stands at the scene watching. Now we're finding out that he was there for 3 hours. Never identified himself as the car in front of Rebecca Grossman.
He just goes to her house and just doesn't turn back around at all. He just
Correct. That is exactly what happened. And the thing is we're finding out so much more now in the civil proceedings because he has been deposed.
Discovery is much broader in a civil case, and so
And the people are so angry over here. Oh, she killed them. She was drunk. She was this.
So she was arrested. Let's get back to like what happened.
Okay, let's go back to what really happened. So Scott shows up back at the scene. He's surveying the damage, does not identify himself. Rebecca's daughter sees him there at the scene. Okay. Mm-hmm. And he looks at her and says, if you tell anybody I was here, I'm going to ruin your family.
Mm.
Okay. So she is left at the scene. She has damage on her car. Now, when she went through the crosswalk, the only thing she could see in front of her was Scott's car, not the kids that were in front of Scott's car. So as she pulled over, okay, so what happened was because of the force of the bodies that landed on her car, her Mercedes emergency system kicked into place. And so that kind of shut down her car, but she pulled over to the side of the road. Obviously, she didn't try to keep gunning. She wasn't in the middle of the road. She was, because she did not know what she hit or what hit her car, actually is even more factual. She pulled over and the Mercedes operator gets on and says, you know, are you okay? Goes through the whole motions and says, stay there until law enforcement gets there. She didn't get out of the car and start running away. You know, if she wanted to flee, she could have done it that way. She didn't do it. Okay. She stayed because she had no idea. The operator asked her, do you know what you hit? Do you know what happened? No, I have no idea what I hit. Okay. So law enforcement comes. Now there's a video of the, and this is not body cam video because this was before the Los Angeles County Sheriff's Department actually had body cam video.
Oh, okay.
This was on an officer's cell phone. So that video is also on my site. Former Sheriff Alex Villanueva, who I know very well and have known for many years, he actually got those cameras distributed throughout the department in 2021.
Okay.
So they gave her breathalyzer and understandably, whether you know what you hit, don't know what you hit, when you're in an accident like that, you're going to have a trauma response. Your body's, you know, going to respond to that, right?
Right, right.
And so she had trouble blowing in the breathalyzer. And I think she also has some other type of condition. You know, she was 60 years old at the time, or 59. Like, it's not like she's 20, you know. So they took her to the hospital to get a blood draw. She was never charged with a DUI, ever. She was below the legal limit. She was never charged with a DUI.
But wasn't there something about her being tested later?
Valium.
Well, there's the Valium. But she was also tested again later and her alcohol, blood alcohol level went up or something? I heard that in a podcast.
Yes. There's a lot of different accounts of multiple blood draws. But ultimately, out of all of those blood draws,
she was never charged.
She was never charged with DUI.
Okay.
Want consistent color for every job? Mylow's Pro Rewards members get a 20% paint discount on future purchases after paint annual qualifying spend reaches $3,000. Plus, order eligible in-stock paint and paint supplies by 2 p.m. for free same-day delivery by 8 p.m. Improving is easy at Lowe's. Excludes spray paint and mist tints. More exclusions, terms, and conditions apply. Subject to change. Details at Lowe's.com/terms. Same-day delivery valid in select zip codes. Subject to driver availability. Details at Lowe's.com/same-day-delivery.
Now, as shady as the sheriff's department, and trust me, I am a huge law enforcement supporter, huge. I support the deputies and the line staff at LAPD, at LASD. They all know that when they have problems, they come to me and I report on it and I help them and I support them. But I know how shady some of these guys are and I expose them all the time and I started exposing them during the Malibu Creek State Park shootings. And that was specifically that station that we're talking about. And the captain at the time of Rebecca's accident was a good friend of mine. Okay. I got him that captain spot. Okay. I begged Alex, please put Chuck in that spot. So I know what a good captain he is, but I also know you can't micromanage 200 you know, personnel in that station. You have to have faith in your investigators.
Right.
And you have to just trust that they are doing their job, right? Well, these guys really sucked. Okay. They were so negligent. So basically, Scott left. His car was never examined that night. Never. She was left at the scene and they just looked at it and just said, let's wrap this up, put a bow on it, and call it a day, right? And big headlines, everything. But problem is that there were car parts, multiple car parts that did not match Grossman's vehicle. But guess what? They were very consistent with Scott's vehicle.
Yeah. And the big one in your reporting is the fog light cover, right? So can you tell us about this fog light cover at the scene?
Well, he had two black Mercedes, an older one and a newer one. And they both had fog lights. Okay. Rebecca's car did not have fog lights. There were multiple parts, though. I think there were, if I remember correctly, in one of my articles, I think there were like 8 parts that did not match her car, and they all went missing. All of them.
So they were initially collected at the scene.
Logged onto a supplemental report, which I published, and they went missing.
The evidence went missing. The physical evidence was.
The physical evidence went missing. And I bet you none of those other podcasts that you've heard mentioned that.
Yeah.
Did they?
I had not heard that. I mean, look, what I heard was what was kind of reported in popular media. And honestly, it makes her look terrible.
Yeah.
And then I read your report that was just recently published in the current, the unfair prosecution of Rebecca Grossman, how the real murderer got away, which it's brave. It's brave of you to even title it like that.
But it is the unfair. It's unfair. Yeah. He was not.
Well, not that part. Not that part. The other part. The second half.
In terms of the unfairness, let's look at the two paths for these two individuals. And so
let's do it.
Starting with her. As Robbie noted, she is charged with implied malice murder, also called depraved heart murder, right? And that theory is that even though she didn't intentionally kill these children, she was driving recklessly. And she is ultimately convicted, right, of implied malice murder?
First of all, the implied malice doesn't even apply.
We'll get to that definition, but yeah, just that's her outcome.
She did not flee, and she did not go on a mission to kill people while driving. So there's no implied malice there. And I gave even case examples in previous articles that I wrote of what the definition of implied malice is. They also used the fleeing as an extra implied malice. She didn't flee. And I gave the case law that supports that she did not flee. Fleeing is leaving the scene and never returning. You can actually leave the scene and come back and identify yourself, and that is not fleeing.
And yet she was still convicted. That she was still convicted of it, though, right?
Yes. The reason, well, because they suppressed so much evidence at the criminal trial. Even his best friend, Royce Clayton, said on the stand, and I gave the screenshot of that criminal testimony, they asked him, Royce, why are you not friends with Scott anymore? Okay, and they were friends for a long time. And by the way, my first husband, the father of my children, is a former Major League Baseball player. So I knew Royce way back in the day, okay? And I know Royce from Malibu, like later on, right? So I don't remember which side, defendant or prosecutor. Pretty sure it was the prosecutor, Ryan Gould. Asked Royce Clayton, why are you not friends with Scott Erickson? And he said, because I know he's responsible for what happened to those two children. You know why? Because Scott called Royce to tell him what happened. So Royce really does know what happened. And the sheriff's department called him that night and asked him what his knowledge was, because Royce's cousin, I believe, is retired LASD. Retired sheriff's department.
They did. They interviewed Royce that same night. Okay.
Yes. So they had the knowledge that Scott was the driver in front of Rebecca. Did not go find him. Did not interview him that night. Did not examine the car.
So if we're breaking that down, right? So she is convicted of implied malice, depraved heart murder. He initially is just convicted of misdemeanor reckless driving, but then he gets to do a public service announcement about unsafe driving. And even that, these are the two outcomes we're looking at, right? Of implied malice murder for her and nothing at this point for Scott Erickson, right?
And not only that, but there are so many cases of manslaughter, you know, traffic deaths in similar circumstances or worse. They were never charged with murder. She didn't flee the scene. And she didn't go out intending to murder. She's never had a DUI. Scott has. Scott has had a DUI. She's never had a DUI. Then they're talking about some CHP officer comes and says, oh, she's had all these racing tickets and she made this nasty statement. Oh, also the implied malice. So a statement made by, I guess you call her an emergency technician that was supposedly at the hospital. She said she heard, and this statement came up 2 years after the fact, through the Justice for Mark and Jacob Iskander Facebook page, which is anything but justice on that page. It is a smear campaign toward anybody who wants to challenge the narrative that Rebecca is solely responsible. Anyway, so Terrell Grasso apparently contacted this Facebook page, made a post. They took it down. And then all of a sudden, she is now a witness. Her statement is what they used really for the implied malice, which was, I should be home in my garage now and none of this would have happened. Well, guess what? There are three witnesses that came out during the civil proceedings. They say they never heard it.
Who was the person who made the Facebook post and it was taken down? A nurse?
Terrell Grasso, an emergency technician, I believe is called.
Okay.
So they used that as their concrete implied malice, you know, on top of the fleeing.
That was actually introduced, like somebody testified to that. So
yes.
Colin, why wouldn't that be hearsay?
It is hearsay, especially when two deputies and the emergency room doctor both said, I didn't hear that in the hospital. I heard it later in court, but I didn't hear it in the hospital. And those two deputies never left her side.
Does it fall into an exception to hearsay, Colin?
Yeah, I mean, this is, you know, for listeners who watched the Karen Reed trial out of Massachusetts, if it is an alleged statement by the defendant themselves, it's defined as non-hearsay. But it sounds like in both this case and the Karen Reed case, Although one person said the defendant made this statement, there are others disputing that and saying the statement wasn't made. So it comes into court, but it seems like it was very tenuous in terms of statement.
Well, there are three witnesses that cannot say that they heard her say that at the hospital. Three. And two deputies that never left her side.
Another thing that I've seen come up in the reporting is it seemed like people were really turned off by the way Rebecca acted in the aftermath, which is linked to kind of what you're saying now, that she was reported to say this, but apparently she's making phone calls. I don't know. There are certain things she was doing that turned people off, and I'm not exactly sure what it was, but like, she was not looking good in the media.
Okay, let me tell you, I have had two conversations just in the last, one in the last 24 hours with a reporter at the Daily Mail, and one with a California Post reporter. You know, they started a new California Post now, offshoot of the New York Post, who contacted me a few weeks ago wanting to talk to me about my coverage of the Grossman trial and wanted access to Peter Grossman. Well, let me tell you, the California Post reporter says to me, yeah, I've read all your articles, blah, 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 blah. And then when these leaked torrid texts come out, which I can explain more about that too, he writes this whole story that is just so sensational and just BS. And I contacted him and I said, what is wrong with you? I thought you said you read my articles. The details are right there. He said, well, they want us to go with the vibe of what's already out there.
Wow.
Okay, so wait, and even worse, yesterday, Daily Mail reporter calls me because he wants access to Sheriff Villanueva. And I said, sure, let me contact Alex, make sure he wants to talk to you, because Alex has gotten screwed in the press too, okay? So he said, oh yeah, you know, I do want to talk to you more about the Grossman case because, you know, the civil trial is coming up and all this other stuff. I said, yeah, but you know what? Daily Mail has really just acted just like all the rest of them. They don't care about the truth. He admitted in text saying, yeah, they just went with the story that was presented to them. So they're getting clicks by saying she's a monster. She's a socialite. She's a this, she's a that.
She's like this heartless, privileged.
Yes. She is a philanthropist, and there is so much of her work at the Grossman Burn Foundation that is documented. I mean, it's insane.
It's okay. Let me ask you something. I guess my question is why? Why, when it actually even seems like an easier conviction for the police, an easier prosecution for the state to go after Scott? I mean, why? Why from night one did they say, no, we're going to make her the target of our?
I'll tell you why, because these guys are shady as you know what. I can say the worst. Again, I've done my extensive reporting on the Lost Hill Sheriff Station. They covered up 2 years worth of shootings in the Malibu Creek State Park shootings that ended in the death of Tristan Baudet. Okay? So that was 2 years worth of cover-ups. That's how I met Sheriff Alex Villanueva. Okay? So, and then there's the Maitrice Richardson case, where so much was covered up in that case, still has not been resolved. Bottom line is, Scott is a Dodger, and those boys love their athletes. They love their Dodgers. What I assume happened, and I'm pretty sure it happened, that once he realized what he was responsible for, I know for a fact that night, and I reported on it, he called his criminal attorney. Why do you call a criminal attorney if you've got nothing to hide? And if your car doesn't have any damage on it and you did nothing, why did you go to the scene and not identify yourself? Why was your car not examined for 8 days? Because he switched it out. I'm telling you right now, somebody was paid off.
Oh, he switched his cars.
Yes. Yes.
So the video footage doesn't help establish which car he had.
Not really.
Night.
It's dark. It's dark. But actually, to tell you the truth, if there was some type of I don't know, enhancing a video. Possibly you could see the difference in the body style.
Or the cars didn't have black box. I mean, I don't know what kind of information these black boxes that the cars, some cars have.
Well, he got rid of all the damage. Mm. So chances are it went to a chop shop that night. His lawyer and also his manager, best friend, whatever you want to call him, Rick Thurman, he has knowledge of it too. And by the way, I've reported on all this. Not one person has emailed me to refute anything that I've said in 18 articles.
Yeah.
Not one. I have a spotless investigative reporting career. 15 years, no retractions, no takedowns for inaccuracy. So if anybody had a problem with my reporting, they could have reached out. They did not. So it's, here's the thing. When this accident happened, George Gascon, total pro-criminal, let's get the criminals back on the street, let's be lenient on them. He had just been sworn into office. This was his first high-profile case. He was getting hammered left and right by his own deputy district attorneys because he was removing enhancements from these rapists and murderers and blah, blah, blah. So he had to kind of, you know, clean up his image a little, and he used this opportunity to do so. Of course, it was during the pandemic, the post-George Floyd. So white people were the enemy, pretty much. Okay, so, you know, Black Lives Matter, that whole thing. So white people were the enemy, especially rich white people.
Wait, is Scott not white?
No, but Scott is an athlete.
Okay.
And I'm telling you right now, that's a big difference. You know what I mean? Athletes are put on a pedestal, especially by these law enforcement boys. They love their Dodgers. They love their Dodgers. I wish I had my hat close by.
Look, at the end of the day, I think somebody had to be held liable.
Well, yeah, she was left at the scene.
Right. Well, let me just say, it just so happens that the two people are white. Mm-hmm. So I don't know if that was necessarily a conscious decision. The DA had to say, I'm going after a white person.
No, no.
The two people are white.
No, no,
involved.
Yeah, yeah.
So, but what I want to know is what convicted her then? If you're saying the forensics don't match, the videos, then how was she actually convicted of this? What was the evidence?
Because they suppressed evidence at the trial that, like...
What evidence was presented that convinced the jury?
Well, I don't know every single piece of evidence, but they sure didn't say that, oh, there was another car at the scene and the parts are missing. And I even posted the testimony from the medical examiner that said...
So the defense never called Scott to the stand?
No, the defense did try. Look, here's what I'm going to say. I don't think the defense did a good job at all. As a matter of fact, I think they were horrible. Okay. Horrible.
Okay.
And so that's part of the problem. They did not do that. As a matter of fact, even during the civil trial, Grossman's civil attorneys, I don't think are doing like a good enough job. Mm. How about that? And, you know, I've been attacked for my reporting on this. It is 100% factual, 100% factual. And it has been suppressed by the media because they just put out that mainstream narrative and everybody, you know, drank the Kool-Aid. But look, he's not, there's a very good chance that Scott is the one who is truly responsible. I believe 100% that he is. Okay. After all the work that I've done on this case, I believe he is 100% responsible. And he's acting, as a matter of fact, during the civil depositions, every question that he was asked, he took the Fifth Amendment. Chances are, on the stand in the criminal trial, he would have done the same. And I mean, there's just so much reasonable doubt there.
So the family brought wrongful death action against Rebecca and not against Scott, though.
Oh, no, no, Scott is.
He's involved as well.
They absolutely did. Okay. Yeah. They absolutely did. That's how we're finding out that he was at the scene.
Is this ongoing or is it has it wrapped up?
Oh, no, it's still.
It's April, right? April will be the scheduled trial date for the civil.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So it's upcoming, in fact.
So there is so much reasonable doubt. You know, again, the implied malice, the fleeing, doesn't work.
Let me focus on that, Cece, because this is actually something I teach in class, and I'm interested to see your thoughts on this again, because there's why they go after her instead of Scott. Then there's the question of why did they go with implied malice murder instead of involuntary manslaughter, right? And so, as you say, the evidence is that he is the lead vehicle. And the bystanders, they hear these two collisions about 3 or 5 seconds apart. And so I could easily see the prosecutor coming into court because most car accidents, it is manslaughter. It's not murder.
Right.
And they would say she was speeding.
Reckless.
Even if another vehicle hit the kids first, if she was secondary damage, that's still involuntary manslaughter. But instead, as you say, they escalate this up to what we call depraved heart murder, implied malice murder. And that, for a reasonable discussion in a second, puts this verdict in jeopardy. Why do you think they went all the way up to murder in this, as opposed to just going with a seemingly winnable case for involuntary manslaughter?
I know for a fact that George Gascon was getting hammered. He was just getting hammered, especially by his own office. He needed a win. He needed a win. And this was an easy win. They just had to suppress the reasonable doubt. And that's what they did. And because he was getting sued by his own deputy district attorneys, and then I think some other organization, then he's getting personally sued. Like, he needed a win big, 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 big.
I guess that is the big win, so to speak. Yeah.
It was a highly politicized case.
Yeah. To your point about being an easy win, I actually kind of wonder about that because, and I think this was in your reporting as well, when we look at depraved heart murder, implied malice murder, it requires the jury to find two things: that the defendant acted with extremely reckless indifference to the value of human life, and that objectively it was highly probable that death would result. In this case, as you've reported on, the jury instruction did not have that language about a high degree of probability a death would result. In other words, going back to manslaughter versus murder, they could argue she was speeding. Even if she hit the kid second, she's guilty of that. But here, as you know, they're trying to claim malice, that this is elevated to murder. And so, you know, what do you think about this jury instruction, as you've reported, and whether that lowered the burden of proof on the prosecution?
Everything about this whole thing stinks because there's a lot of inside stuff. And even jurors that were members of the Justice for Mark and Jacob Iskander page. So here the jurors are on that page. Not only were the jurors on that page, okay, during this process, but Ryan Gould's wife was openly on that page. How is that fair?
How does that disqualify the jurors? I'm so confused.
Thank you. But that's my point. There's so many things here that are just so blatant and it was never reported on. And just like the California Post reporter says, oh, well, they want us to go with the vibe and they only want us to use 600 words. How do you report on a complex case like this in 600 words? It's impossible. And on one of the photos, you'll see the juror badge right there at the memorial site after the conviction. Does that not show bias?
I mean, I feel like the fact that they're on the Facebook page is a little more concerning than even then.
Oh, well, I have the screenshot of that juror. I have not posted it because we're still in this. There's still ongoing legal proceedings, so I don't want to interfere with that.
Are you worried at all that Scott might come after you? I mean, like, you're openly.
Oh, please bring it. Bring it. I'm not reporting anything that is not 100% factual. And my niche is trial, criminal cases. That's my niche for investigative reporting. And many people, you know, come to me because I'm an independent platform. They will not get fair press like LA Times or any of those people. They won't do that. As a matter of fact, one of my good friends is the former assistant LAPD chief, Al Labrada. He was skewered by the LA Times, and it was a bunch of lies, and they omitted so many things. And so that's why platforms like mine exist. My public corruption reporting is completely self-funded. Nobody funds that. I am retained by people, litigants, who are desperate to get the truth out there. And that's part of my niche. And that is what makes me unique. So
are you working with the defense on this case then?
I am working with the defense, absolutely.
Okay, that's important to know too as well. Not that
well, it is, but it isn't, because the bottom line is I have full editorial control. Mm-hmm. And I have full editorial control. Like, nothing goes out without my final approval. And that's why I have a blemish-free 15-year career, because it doesn't matter if the defendants come to me or the plaintiffs come to me.
Yeah.
What matters is, and that's what people fundamentally don't understand about independent investigative journalism, is that there is no statute. As a matter of fact, if you look on my page, you can see it. Go on the support our mission to expose the truth. There is no law that states that, if you look at it, none of the mainstream media will tell you where their funding comes from. Okay? They don't tell you. They don't disclose that. I don't have to disclose where my funding comes from because it is of civic importance. Mm. It is news that needs to come out, and it is 100% factual. That's it. You know, but again, 90% of my content on that site is self-funded.
Yeah.
So,
Cece, let me ask, in terms of this pending civil trial, I assume it's a joint trial. Has there been a motion to sever it all? Because I imagine that she'll want to argue this is Scott's fault. And if it's a joint trial, that's a lot more difficult to do than if there are separate trials.
I don't know, actually. I need to ask that question. Thank you for... Look, all my 18 articles has been to inform the public and set the record straight. And clearly, there's a lot to set the record straight, right? So the civil trial has only given me more information.
And sometimes you even have two separate juries in a civil trial because one would decide her liability and one deciding his because...
But here's another thing. The reality is that the press did not do their job. Mainstream media did not do their job in this case. And they just, as you said, made her look like a monster. Sure. Okay. And that was part of the jury bias, because you couldn't escape that press, okay? Clearly, again,
the jury was not sequestered.
No.
I'm assuming, yeah.
No, okay. No.
Not if they're on Facebook.
Exactly.
Yeah. I have two kind of case-related questions.
Uh-huh, sure.
One is that I'm assuming the parents of the boys were witnesses as well. What was their testimony? What did they think they saw that night?
Well, it's interesting because the mother's testimony changed drastically from the night
of
the first report to the testimony. So, again.
What did she say initially? What did she say initially?
Initially, she saw the black SUV first.
Okay.
That's the first one through.
Absolutely.
I think everyone kind of, yeah.
Okay.
There were so many, and some of the witnesses were intimidated to even, you know, they were heavy-handed. They were intimidating witnesses. There's just so much shady stuff that went on. It's just incredible.
And was that the argument at trial? Because obviously these initial statements, Lisa, are saying it's the black SUV first.
Mm-hmm.
And at trial, is the claim by the prosecutors that Scott was first and sort of swerved around the kids, or was that just not even referenced at trial?
I don't know if that was referenced at trial, to be honest with you, but I do know that the most compelling testimony was from Royce, because Scott called him, told him what happened, and he said, I don't want to be friends. Why would you not want to be friends with somebody if they didn't kill the kids? He said it. Under oath. Mm-hmm. He also said under oath that, because the prosecutor said, so have you ever seen anybody, you know, drunk, inebriated, whatever? He said, oh, yeah, I have. He said, would you say that Rebecca Grossman was drunk? He said, absolutely not.
Mm.
There's so much of that on top of the medical examiner saying, I can't rule out multiple vehicles.
Right.
I mean, it's right there.
But if it's multiple vehicles, I mean, that speaks towards Scott striking first and then Rebecca striking second. I mean, is that basically the thinking that you have, is that he struck the kids first and
Absolutely.
Then she was falling and couldn't avoid, right?
Yes, that's what I'm saying. She has responsibility.
Right, but just
not murder.
To imply malice murder. Right.
Not murder. Yeah,
I think we're on the same page there. Yeah.
I'm curious about like any forensics in this. Like, for example, were the children's clothing have fragments of of, you know, any of the vehicles, black paint or, you know, anything like that?
There is testimony from the medical examiner that there were some reports that Rebecca's grill was on one of the boys' bodies. Well, that's not true. Okay. And that is in the medical examiner's report. I don't know about fragments of paint, but I can tell you if they're going to get rid of evidence that belongs to another vehicle, it doesn't surprise me how something like that might go missing too. You know what I mean? So I can't tell you definitively on that. The bottom line is, there is a tremendous amount of reasonable doubt here. And had all of this been revealed like it should be, she would not have been convicted of murder. No way.
I have a question about, again, the evidence that disappeared. At any time, did a judge call on the state to be like, explain yourself? Where's the chain of custody?
No. As a matter of fact, a private investigator that was hired by the defense, they were on the stand and they were grilled by the defense, to testify to the fact that they actually, this private investigator went to the Lost Hill station and said, here's the report. Show me the evidence. Mm-hmm. Show me the parts. Yeah. We can't. It's gone. It's missing.
But there was no motions filed in court to compel the evidence.
I don't know that for a fact. Okay. I don't know that for a fact. I know it existed. I know it went missing and nobody really gave a crap. Okay. I also know I have many friends at the DA's office and one of them is very high profile deputy district attorney. And he told me straight up, he said, Judge Brandolino does not like Rebecca Grossman. Mm. So there is judicial bias there big time. And Brandolino, even though she was not charged with a DUI, Brandolino is still allowing the argument that she was drunk. How do you do that? How is that even possible?
Mm. Yeah. I'm wondering if the jury was like feeling like, look, somebody's got to be held responsible for this. Nobody else has been charged. We're not even being offered an alternate verdict here, right? Colin, like it's either this or it's or she goes scot-free. Maybe that's what compelled the jury to be like, well, we somebody has to pay for this.
Scot-free.
Right.
Okay. So,
Cece, I think you mentioned a deposition of Scott. I'm not sure. Has he been deposed and has he given his official version of event? Is he on the record as saying like what he did during this driving incident? Or is he not in the record yet?
He took the fifth.
At the criminal case?
No, during the civil case.
During his deposition.
He took the fifth. I don't even think that the line of the prosecution had already laid out the case that he wasn't responsible on any level. That he blah, blah, blah. And then all of a sudden he wasn't available to the defense to get on the stand.
Okay.
And you know what? He got out of it because they just said, oh, reckless driving.
Yeah.
And also the prosecution said, oh, there was no racing. Like they even said that. And it's like.
And Cece, in the civil action that the family has brought, when they're laying out their statement of the case, are they just saying one or both of them hit the children, we're not sure, or that do they actually have a theory that they've proffered in the civil case as to what they argue happened in the crash?
I am not privy to all of the civil testimony. I only know there's a lot of it, as you can imagine.
The complaint should be publicly available, right? The complaint itself.
The civil complaint.
Oh, yeah. Yes. The civil complaint is publicly available, but
yeah. And do they is there a here's our theory, or we don't care exactly who hit the kids, one or both of them hit the kids, they're both responsible?
Their contention, I believe, is that Scott was the one who kind of was the instigator, if you want to say instigator, that's why he's responsible. But ultimately they're just going with her that she's the one that murdered their kid.
Oh, so they're going, I guess, with the criminal.
Yeah. But if they're suing both of them, then that's an admission right there that they think that Scott has some liability.
Exactly. And if he doesn't have liability, why are you suing him? You know what I mean? Right. It's like if he just got off with reckless driving, it's like.
Yeah. I do wonder how the family, if anybody's asked the family, how do you feel about the fact that Scott was not criminally charged?
Oh, they don't. Let me tell you right now. They are tunnel vision. Sue Rebecca. Hope she dies in jail. Blah, blah, blah. Again, she has responsibility. She was speeding and driving too close to Scott. Okay. Wrong place, wrong time to be doing any of that. And it resulted in the death of two children. But murder is murder. So right. Number one, there was no murder, but manslaughter. I mean, I'm not a lawyer, so I don't know if it is manslaughter, because even the medical examiner cannot definitively say that she is the one who killed the kids.
Who actually struck the child.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
And he could not rule out multiple vehicles.
Yeah. I guess if they were going above the speed limit, both of them, then maybe manslaughter, right, Colin? Yeah. I mean, we are two lawyers, but I defer to Colin, who's the professor here.
I'd have to see the medical examiner's testimony to be able to say anything definitive, you know, one way or the other. But yeah, I mean, it certainly seems like if this is guilt, it is involuntary manslaughter as opposed to depraved heart murder.
Yes, yeah. Yes. And I'm happy to send you guys all the documents that you need. I have them, you know.
Yeah, I'm interested to see the medical examiner's testimony. Yeah, I would definitely say, to the extent you're consulting with her defense in the civil action, that a motion to sever or impanel two separate juries is something that they might be interested in doing.
I will find out. And again, in 2020, I was covering the CEO of LA Metro, Philip Washington, was distributing fake masks, et cetera, et cetera. So there's a lot of corruption going on at LA Metro, and I was contacted by whistleblowers. So my head was in that. And I had heard about this case, and I'm like, ooh, that's tragic. I don't want to get involved in that, like, blah, blah, blah. Last year, I was contacted by the defense because the truth in this case was so suppressed, and the mainstream media just completely distorted the entire story. And me, I only care about facts. And I mean, I'm not a big fan of liars. And that's my main thing. You look at my website, I expose the truth. That's what I do. So.
Well, I'm assuming now, so appeals are ongoing in terms of her criminal appeals.
There is an appeal. Yeah. There is an appeal right now. They just had the hearing. But I got to tell you, I'm not very confident in the judges that heard this case. And they themselves seem very, you know, very much like they drank the Kool-Aid of the mainstream media that, you know, that pushed out a narrative. And that's why I'm here, to correct the record.
Are her appeal lawyers the same as her trial lawyers, or the different team?
Different team, but I just, you know, I mean, even I'm telling them, like, why aren't you doing this? Like, what is wrong? I'll give you a perfect example. So the plaintiff's attorneys are leaking testimony to this Facebook page. And just last week, this woman went on a smear campaign because I'm being paid by the defense to report on this. And there's nothing illegal about it. There's lots of journalists out there, investigative journalists that are out there that are for hire to report on legal cases. I mean, it's just, it's a thing.
I actually had no idea. I actually did not know that.
A lot of people don't. A lot of people, oh, you have a duty to do this. I have a duty to do that. You know what that did last week? That smear campaign? Well, it got me, filing cease and desist, and I'm going to file defamation of character, and I'm going to screw them big time because I have a blemish-free 15-year career. Okay? So, and I remain private and will remain private because that's what I do. And again, it's about the facts, reporting the facts in a criminal case, reporting the facts. I guess you could look at me like I'm a court reporter on some level, right? So, but you know, you can't allow, she didn't get a fair trial, period. It is the unfair prosecution of Rebecca Grossman, as I've laid it out for you with what has happened.
You know, our audience is very familiar with the fact that oftentimes, I mean, you know, all we do is wrongful convictions. And so that often, that happens not because of so much what happened in court, but what was excluded from the jury's knowledge and information. And I'm assuming that, you know, every time there was evidence, testimony, whatever, that was excluded by the judge, that's something that the appellate team is going to argue was improperly done so. And
I think they did argue that. I have to go review the hearing again. I have not even reported on that.
Mm-hmm. A decision hasn't been, I mean, the judge hasn't ruled yet.
No.
Okay.
I think all it's right. going to take like a month. But what I meant, you know, with that whole thing about leaking the a discovery, it's highly illegal to do that. Mm. And they are trying to discredit my reporting. And my reporting is 100% factual and accurate. And it really is covering all the things that were not revealed in the criminal trial. And that is my job. That's what I do.
Is the civil trial going to be televised or streamed online?
I have no idea. I have no idea. I have no idea. Yeah. But I will tell you that, you know, look, she does bear responsibility. She's been in jail for 2 years. 2 years. Okay. Mm-hmm. But murder? Spend the rest of her life in prison while he just walks free and nobody examines anything. He's got no bad press other than these leaked texts. Again, that is the plaintiff's attorney, which they're going to get complaints filed against them, too, because they should not be doing that. And they're doing that to intimidate and to make sure that the mainstream media doesn't want to report on it. So,
well, Cece, I'm going to make sure that our producer forwards Colin's contact information too, because I'd be curious to see after Colin, you review any of the files, what you'd have to say about that. I want folks to know where they can find you online, Cece, where they can find your reporting, your website, which you've referred to a few times, so they can read for themselves what you've investigated, reported on.
Yes, please make your own decisions. Just be informed, you know. It's thecurrentreport.com.
And are you on social media? Should they look for you there as well?
Yeah, I mean, yes. I'm going to tone down my social media a little bit. I'm really tired of the haters. I'm sick of it. Like, so they can find me. It's very easy to find me on social media.
So if they go to thecurrentreport.com and they will find this. And once again, I think, if you Google, certainly you can find Cece Woods and her reporting on this case. I mean, there's a lot more to unfold in this case, I feel like. So hopefully we'll continue to follow up on it.
Well, I'm hoping that we might have a lead to some other things. Mm. So I'll let you know.
Yeah.
I'll let you know. But I'm going to keep reporting on it. Like, I have more to expose in this. So
I will say this, which what was interesting to me, given like the I feel like when the Karen Reed stuff was going on, it was everywhere. It was just all consuming. I haven't seen similar outrage over this case because it feels like most people are comfortable with the verdict. And most people have been like, you know what I mean? Like with Karen Reed, it was like you had, it was fierce, you know, the folks who supported Karen versus the folks who supported the state. And like, but here it doesn't, I feel like there isn't that kind of, she's not getting a lot of public support, I guess is what I'm trying to say.
No, she's not getting it. But again, it's not my job to convince people to support her. Mm-hmm. It's my job to convince people this can happen to you too. Mm-hmm. That's the most important thing is that you need to understand that this justice system did not work in this case.
Well, thank you so much, Cece. We are going to continue to follow your reporting on thecurrentreport.com, and maybe we'll have you back on in 6 months or so to see all the new developments.
Okay, sounds good.
I appreciate your work.
Thank you.
All right, you take care and have a great day.
Bye.
Hey, Undisclosed listeners. It's Meethal, executive producer of Undisclosed Toward Justice. Before I roll through the credits, I've got a few quick notes. By now, most of you probably know about our Facebook community group. If you haven't joined yet, please go to facebook.com/groups/towardjustice and answer 3 simple questions and you're in. But seriously, answer the questions because a bunch of you are still pending since you've only answered 1 or 2. They're easy questions, I promise. In addition to engaging with us through the Facebook group, you can also leave us a voice note at speakpipe.com/undisclosed. We always check the messages, and so far, I think we've answered all of them. We also have a Patreon page with 3 different tiers of perks, the lowest one just being $1, which allows us to continue to do this work. Other tiers include bonus episodes, early access to merch, and even joining Rabia in a live true crime Zoom discussion. Just go to patreon.com/undisclosedpod. Now, on to the real credits. A huge shout out to Hannah McCarthy for audio production. Thank you to Patrick Cortez and Romero Marquez for our theme music. For anyone new here, you can engage with us online by going to Instagram or Facebook at Undisclosed Podcast. We're also on TikTok, YouTube, and X at Undisclosed Pod. Whether you're a new or returning listener, you can always check out our previous cases and bonus episodes by going to our website at undisclosedpod.com. If you would like to follow Colin and Rabia on social media, you can find Rabia at RabiaSquared2 on Instagram and Colin at EvidenceProf on Instagram, X, and Blue Sky. Thank you all for your continued support and for supporting all of our sponsors. Until next time.